Thank you, Joe. I'd never met Joe before I got here today, and we discovered that indeed we do live in Arlington, Virginia, just a couple blocks away, so I'm sure we'll be getting together. I think my remarks here today are probably going to be more mundane and soft-hitting, and certainly they'll be non-conspiratorial, but I'll go ahead with them. There are really three givens that affect reporters in Washington now and have for a number of years, and I'm sure you'll agree with these. At least I think they're givens, and I think you'll agree. One is that most reporters are liberal. We now have that quantified by Professor Rothman and Lichter. They are also adversarial, as we've heard from other speakers last night, particularly from Irving Kristol. Mark Shields, who's a Washington columnist who masquerades as a liberal but really isn't, gives speeches in which he claims that Bob Novak is one of the more adversarial reporters in town, and he says Bob Novak's motto is, if you don't have anything nice to say, let's hear it. And that sort of captures the adversarial tone of the news media in Washington in particular. And third, as Irving Kristol mentioned last night, and I thought correctly, is there's a real bent for sensationalism in journalism in Washington. And you've seen that. I thought he cited a very good example last night, the Jim Watt case, blowing up a minor off-the-cuff statement into a major political event that drove Watt out of office. Another example, which I've written about in the American Spectator, and some conservatives might not agree with me about, but was the Billy Carter affair, when Billy Carter was involved with the Libyan government, and it went on for months and months in the press, particularly in Washington, in the Star, and the Post, and there was nothing there. What we knew in the beginning was all there ever turned out to be, that he was had taken some money from the Libyans, but that's gone now. So, but all three matter. All three of these matter. It's not just that reporters are liberal. That's part of it, but it's that they are adversarial, and sensationalism is something they don't shy away from. Well, obviously, all three of these are not good for Ronald Reagan. I mean, he's not a liberal. He's a conservative, so that clashes. He's the head of the government. It's his government. It's his administration. So with reporters being adversarial, that doesn't help him. And as far as sensationalism is concerned, he's the biggest target around. So that doesn't help him either. So we've seen a lot of different ways that Reagan, unflattering ways that Reagan has been characterized by the press. I'll run down a few of them. But first, despite the press categorizing Reagan in a whole lot of unflattering ways, covering him has been enormously frustrating for most reporters in Washington, because they slash and slash at Reagan, but he doesn't seem to bleed. The one that we've heard a lot about, particularly in Newsweek, is Reagan the detached president, the guy who spends a couple hours a day in his office and his aides do all the work and is not really up on the issues and so on. That's one that bothers me a little, as a matter of fact. Reagan is a little detached. I think it's partially true. Then there's one that's been written about. There was an article in Playboy by Curtis Wilkie of the Boston Globe about the ignorance of Ronald Reagan. I think that's something that other reporters have touched on, too. Then there's the Reagan who is blindly defiant of Congress. Certainly we've read a lot about that, particularly in articles that have heroicized Bob Dole and Pete Domenici and even Howard Baker as guys who want to cut the deficit one way or another. Then there's Reagan who is rigid in dealing with the Soviets, terribly rigid man. Then there's the hard-hearted Reagan, the stone-hearted guy who wouldn't help the poor during the recession. Certainly, there was a great deal of that, mainly on television. Television did that much more than even the Washington Post or the Boston Globe. Then there's the reactionary president, the guy who wants to go back to the 30s or World War I or something like that. That's you actually read some of that. I'm sure you all have read it. It's not just the Democratic presidential candidates who say that. On television, in particular, there's been a lot about Reagan the plutocrat, the guy with the $500 cowboy boots and the wife who has all the expensive dresses and so on. And one of my favorite stories that CBS did was about a woman who couldn't get food stamps in North Carolina who lived in a shack. The story was immediately followed, no ad in between, by a story about a $10,000 dress that Nancy Reagan was wearing. That doesn't happen accidentally. And then there's the one that I think in many ways is the most demeaning of Ronald Reagan, and that is the idea of Ronald Reagan as the great communicator. Now, he is a great communicator. There's no question about that, particularly if you saw the speech on Grenada and Lebanon. But the caricature of Reagan that he is a great communicator and nothing else, that any actor could do this, any second-rate actor, a first-rate actor couldn't do it because the first-rate actor would overact. Laurence Olivier would not be convincing as a president. A second-rate actor is certainly convincing. But anyway, I think that's very demeaning, this idea of the great communicator. Anyway, all this has been reported widely, and not just in the Seven Sisters that Irving Kristol is mentioned last night, although they're certainly the main ones, the Post and the Times especially, since that's what the network people read, and the news magazine, too. They're certainly the two most important. But what happens, and this leads to the frustration of reporters, what happens after all this is reported? What happens to Ronald Reagan as a result? Nothing. That's what happens. He doesn't go down in the polls. He isn't hated by the public. He isn't run out of office. He isn't impeached, despite what seven congressmen would like to do. One of the amazing figures, I think, is how high Ronald Reagan's popularity remained during the recession. It was a bad recession. It was long and it was deep. It was very painful for a lot of people. Yet Reagan's popularity, despite a liberal, adversarial, sensationalistic press, remained reasonably high. And now, of course, it's going up a great deal. Reagan, one of the problems for the press is that Reagan, is that people don't seem to be particularly interested in having the presidential time clock punched. And reporters, it's easy if you covered the White House, as I've done, to sort of write about the goings in and out of the Oval Office of the president and treat that as a meaningful measure of a presidency. The public, rightly, doesn't care about that. And as it turns out, a lot of the areas that the press criticizes Reagan for, and I'm not just talking about editorial writers, but the general reporters who cover the White House, where he's been defiant, rigid, reactionary even, he's turned out to be very popular in those areas, the most recent one being the invasion of Grenada, or the rescue in Grenada, however you look at it. Let me speak briefly on Grenada, a little aside from what I'm really talking about, which is the coverage of Reagan. I think Irving Kristol was a little wrong in what he said about the press's expectation of the public reaction to the Grenada invasion. His view was that the press expected the public to be opposed to the invasion. I don't think that, I certainly didn't hear any reporters say that. I think what they expected was that the public would be instinctively in favor of the recession, but would have to have their minds changed by the press that would go to Grenada and destroy all the reasons that Reagan gave for invading. It might take a week, might take 10 days, but that would be the press's role. And certainly the effort was made. The first event where this happened was when the students arrived back. The first wave of students arrived at Charleston Air Force Base on Thursday after the Tuesday invasion. Certainly the reporters who went down there were expecting a different story than the one that occurred. They were not expecting students to kiss the ground, to say Ronald Reagan had saved their lives literally, to say that they used to be doves as one guy did, say he used to be a dove and now doesn't want to hear the military criticized at all. On National Public Radio, where they did a live feed from their reporter down there with the anchorman, wherever he was in Washington or New York, asked what the reaction of the students was. The reporter said they said they were glad to be saved, that they were in danger, and there was a pause on National Public Radio. Obviously, the guy, the anchorman, was thunderstruck. And he said, they did? They said that? So obviously, the press was very surprised most reporters were very surprised that happened. And I think, and I was surprised that it was as dramatic and compelling an event as it was with particularly students kissing the ground. The other thing that the press tried to knock down, and the Washington Post in particular, was the notion that these little other countries down there, the Club Med countries, as somebody has called them, that I'd like to take credit for that. I read it somewhere. that they wanted to knock down the idea that they had actually invited the United States in. And the Post did an exhaustive job and found out that, indeed, these countries had invited Britain in earlier and several other countries, and then it had indeed invited the U.S. in. The Post wrote it. They kind of buried that way down in the story, but it was there if you stuck with it. That was the finding. So since then, basically, the press has changed the subject, and as have the Democratic presidential candidates, to talk about the invasion of Grenada only involved Ronald Reagan and the press. As I said, Ronald Reagan's popularity has soared because of the Grenada invasion. The press believes this. I think most reporters believe it, that there is still some information that's been suppressed, and that it will be turned up eventually, and that Ronald Reagan's popularity as a result of the Grenada invasion will turn out to be short-lived. We shall see. Right now, in the press corps in Washington, there's a debate going on the subject. You might find this a little otherworldly, but the debate is whether or not Reagan has been treated too kindly by the press, whether he's gotten a free ride. I think there's a substantial body of reporters who think that Ronald Reagan indeed has gotten a free ride. The press has been too soft, and you can tell the press has been too soft because Ronald Reagan is still popular. It's pretty good evidence that the press is not doing something right. Certainly, this is frustrating after Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and Jimmy Carter. The press had a great deal to do with their popularity sinking. Every time Gerald Ford would slip, which he did a lot, bump his head getting onto a helicopter, make a misstatement, one when he was speaking at Iowa State University and said Ohio State. CBS led their evening news show with that. And that stuff hurt Ford a great deal. There's no question about it, because it played right on the image that he really wasn't quite smart enough for the job. And so he didn't have the job very long. The press did the same thing with Carter in different ways, playing about his meanness and so on, particularly in the campaign of 1980. Carter's popularity sank. Certainly we know how Nixon's and Johnson's did. If you saw a show not long ago on PBS, there's a show called Inside Story that Hotting Carter has. See people rolling their eyes. Hotting Carter, as you remember, was Jimmy Carter's State Department spokesman. But actually, a couple of the shows have been pretty good. Most haven't, but there have been a couple that were pretty good. There was one that was very revealing on the question, is the press giving Ronald Reagan a free ride? You should have seen it. Bill Greider, who writes for Rolling Stone, who is the Rolling Stone guy that Irving Kristol was talking about, who went from the Post to to Rolling Stone, thinks the press is. They're playing right into Reagan's hands. Lou Cannon said that Ronald Reagan was being treated too fairly. I think you've written about that comment, Joe. Lou Cannon is widely regarded in Washington as, he's the White House reporter for the Washington Post, he's widely regarded as very soft on Ronald Reagan. In fact, he does not take a hard-hitting attitude toward Reagan, but he takes an incredibly condescending attitude toward Reagan, as you would about a child that was not studying enough or something. Sam Donaldson was also on the show. He didn't have anything intelligent to say, as you might expect. So why is there this frustration? Well, the reason is, of course, that the top of it is that the press criticizes Reagan, yet he stays popular. Another part of it is that the press really doesn't understand Reagan. They're used to completely different kinds of politicians, either very pragmatic, very shallow, very conniving. You can fill in the names. And that's what the press is used to covering. The New York Times, at least James Reston and Rick Smith, keep trying to characterize Reagan as just a conventional Paul, a guy that goes with the winds of change. Whenever Reagan makes some dramatic compromise, and he's made a few, Rick Smith or James Reston write and say, aha, here's the real Ronald Reagan. He's just a conventional Paul, just like all the rest. Well, I think he's not. And what the press doesn't understand, certainly they don't, certainly Newsweek doesn't, when it writes about Reagan as a a detached president. In the same article where they wrote about the detached president, they called Reagan an activist, which is kind of hard to be, a detached activist. What they don't understand is that Ronald Reagan is an ideological president, probably certainly the most ideological I've ever covered, but that's not many, and I think probably the most ideological this century, maybe ever. But that's not something reporters really understand. A good example of that recently was when Reagan gave his speech on Lebanon and Grenada. And he told that story, which I thought was very moving, about the Marine in Lebanon who was all bandaged up, and General P.X. Kelly came to see him, and he couldn't talk to him, but he just scribbled out on the piece of paper, Semper Fi. You knew Reagan had to put that in there because it's just the kind of touch that he always adds to his speeches. The television critic for the Washington Post wrote about it and said and criticized him for using that because everybody knew it. That had been written about in town. He criticized Reagan for using it because it wasn't exclusive, which would seem to me to be the wrong way of looking at it. But that evening, when Howard Baker was watching Reagan give that very story, say that very story on television, Howard Baker was crying. And I think Howard Baker understands Reagan. Thank you.